Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, this week, Barry Weiss, the former newsletter editor who has taken over the leadership of CBS News, held an all-hands meeting, yes, only hands were invited, to discuss her vision of the future of CBS News. And basically, it boiled down to this. It didn't even take a boil. It simmered down to this. It was got to make the evening news more like newsletters and social media, because that's where the kids get their news. I don't think anybody raised their hand. Again, they all had hands to say, excuse me, Barry, if the kids want newsletters and social media, they get them from newsletters and social media. Nobody said that. And so on they go. She's hired a bunch of newsletter writers and social media influencers. And if past experience is any guide, kids won't be watching the CBS Evening News even so. As the longtime adage in the news business says, people start watching the news when they get their first mortgage. And by the way, on another subject, attention, Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney. I know you're a little ticked off with the United States right now, but I'm going to ask you a favor on behalf of the people in at least half of the United States. I know you don't want to take any deportees from this country into Canada, but could we please send back the cold Canadian air? Thank you. Hello, welcome to the show.
Streets, dead on my feet, 1540 people wanting to crash out with me. I ain't ready for it. Mardi Gras, I ain't ready for it at all. Party in the car, party in the bar, 1540 people wanting to bang on my guitar. I ain't ready for it. Mardi Gras, I ain't ready for it at all. I fly to Colorado, but I ain't got the cash. Who's gonna pick up all the doggone trash? When I hear the sound of that big bass drum, ready or not, here it comes. Party in the street, party on your feet, 1540 people trying to get a little sleep. I ain't ready for it. Mardi Gras, I ain't ready for it at all. Mardi Gras, I ain't ready for it at all.
Oh, I'm ready for it. I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this edition of Le Show from New Orleans, Louisiana, where we had an influx of ice recently. No, I'm not talking weather. And the officials, the federal government, initially set a goal for the operation in Louisiana of 5,000 arrests. Not just in New Orleans, but all over the place and into Mississippi, according to the Associated Press. After 2 months, the operation has achieved just over 560 arrests. It's about 10%. It's according to a tally printed in the local newspaper, the Times-Picayune. Authorities said of those people arrested, 36 had criminal backgrounds. And on the subject of ice, here's some news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole III. Ice will accompany the U.S. delegation to the Winter Olympics in Italy this coming month. That's according to the Department of Homeland Security. This has stoked a backlash among Italians, angered by the conduct of ICE agents in Minneapolis. Word has gotten out. Must be on the news or something. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents will join a security team from the State Department, quote, to vet and mitigate risks from transnational criminal organizations. That's according to the DHS in a statement attributed to the Assistant Secretary for Public Affairs. Quoting her again, all security operations remain under Italian authority. ICE does not conduct immigration enforcement operations in foreign countries, unquote. So let's all move there. Despite the caveats by U.S. officials, news of the agency's involvement has spurred outcry in Italy, particularly after the killing by ICE and Border Patrol agents of two American citizens in Minnesota. The Italian government said this week, quoted by the New York Times, it was seeking clarification from American diplomats after reports emerged over the weekend that ICE would attend the games. Antonio Tajani, Italy's foreign minister, told reporters ICE agents would not be allowed to deploy in Italian streets. He added that public order during the Olympics would be done only by the Italian national and local police. He stopped short of saying U.S. agents would be limited to operational rooms. I don't know what those are. The Italian government's intervention followed growing outrage from Italian politicians over the agency's presence at the games. Oh, the Olympic Games. It's a movement. Even ICE needs one. Every day! And now, time to follow the dollar. From the very beginning, the F-35, that's a new U.S. jet, that program has been plagued by hundreds of billions of dollars in cost overruns and repeated schedule delays. Those go together, don't they? Even as promised capabilities have been delayed by well over a decade, billions poured into fixes haven't resolved ongoing reliability issues, crippling its operational effectiveness and rocketing the program cost to over $2 trillion. $2 trillion? I could buy you stock in OpenAI. That's 400% more in inflation-adjusted dollars than its estimate way back in 2007 by the Government Accountability Office. This report from Responsible Statecraft, the plane's extreme unreliability has resulted in full mission capable rates, your FMC, of, under 10%. For most of the versions. Unsurprisingly, the services and Lockheed Martin don't really like to talk about FMC. Instead, they like to focus on mission-capable rates of roughly 50%. That's lower than the 90% promised by Lockheed Martin and its service partners. But mission-capable is a very deceptive measure. The services know it. Mission-capable aircraft need only be capable of flying more combat missions, which include training and public relations. Strong circumstantial evidence coupled with emerging data and the service's long history of stonewalling when it comes to problems associated with major programs suggests that the U.S. military services, as well as prime contractor Lockheed Martin, have been babying the F-35s to obscure just how unreliable and expensive they would be if not being nursed along. This coddling of the F-35 lowers some costs and pushes other costs into the future, keeping current year expenses as low as possible. This makes the program look like it's more efficient and effective than it really is, improving the chances of selling and delivering more F-35s, while decreasing the chances the program will be curtailed or canceled. And from The Atlantic, Kristi Noem, you remember her? She's still around. She has spent more than $200 million as part of her deportation campaign. What's the expenditure? Advertising. Advertising to promote the deportation campaign. Follow the dollar. And yes, most of the country is experiencing a severe winter right now. So is crypto. An attacker exploited a bug in an Aperture Finance smart contract to steal at least $3.4 million from users who had enabled instant liquidity management features. Don't they sound good? Instant liquidity. Aperture Finance is a decentralized finance platform that aims to allow users to trade by telling large language models their intents. Aperture has said they disabled portions of their web app impacted by the bug. They're working to try to trace and recover stolen funds. Difficult thing to do in mid-crypto winter. And now, ladies and gentlemen,
news of the godly.
Dateline, Buffalo, New York. Rage, humiliation, guilt, distrust. Those were among the words spoken this week in U.S. District Court in Buffalo, New York, by survivors of clergy sexual abuse. They were testifying in the bankruptcy case of the Buffalo Diocese. Yes, another diocese going bankrupt. 11 survivors, some now in their 60s, delivered raw, sometimes graphic accounts of sexual abuse by priests and nuns of the Catholic Church. According to local TV station WIVB, dozens more will be testifying. The abuse spans decades. More than 900 survivors filed claims against the diocese and their abusers. A Vatican investigation previously found that former bishops shielded abusive priests and moved them from parish to parish. Imagine that. You don't have to. Among those who testified, an attorney who represents numerous survivors and was abused in the early 1980s by the Reverend Michael Freeman. "What we're doing here today is taking back our power," he said. Many survivors described burying the memories for years, afraid to speak out, certain no one would believe them. Gary Astridge said the Reverend Edward Townsend sexually abused him for 4 years, starting when he was just 7. He initially turned to alcohol to escape the pain, but has been sober for a quarter of a century. He accused the diocese leadership of circling the wagon to protect the church's finances and the secrecy of widespread sexual abuse. "I shut up then," he said, "but I'm not shutting up now." Another victim said the Reverend John R. Aurelio sexually abused him in the parking lot after a hockey game in 1969. To this day, he says, he still cannot watch hockey. What the puck? A Catholic Church diocese in Ireland is facing a multi-million dollar sex abuse compensation bill. It's lodged an application with the court over, quote, material uncertainty regarding the finances, asking for guidance over how to manage its shrinking assets. Those are cute, aren't they? The Diocese of Dromore in Northern Ireland, actually, has been at the center of an abuse controversy over its handling of serial child abuser Malachy Finnegan. He was a former priest of the diocese. Church authorities have made an application to the court, which deals with various financial matters, last month. Court hearing linked to the application was held this week. Lawyers for the church were instructed to file an application with the court on behalf of the diocese trustees. Since 2018, the diocese has taken numerous measures. This is the Diocese of Tromore. Has taken numerous measures to liquidate or otherwise realize all other assets available for the benefit of the diocese. That is to say, assets that are not parish assets within the trust, for the purpose of providing fair compensation to claimants for historical clerical abuse. That diocese covers 23 parishes, 48 churches, an estimated Catholic population of around 65,000. This, by the way, is in Northern Ireland, where the Catholics are in a minority. The church has been in the grip of child abuse scandals since the 1990s. It's understood to be rare for church leaders to ask the courts for financial guidance. Finnegan abused boys under his care and later did so as parish priest County Down, so to speak. No, for real. It's believed around 12 young boys, according to Irish News, were targeted by Finnegan, who died in 2002. Many more were physically assaulted. In 2021, church chiefs set up a $3.4 million redress scheme. No. It means, you know, paying them back. With a cap of $110,000 and pledged to exhaust its resources if required. Last month, church authorities agreed to the sale of the bishop's house. The sale of the associated land remains pending. The contents of the house, including ornate furniture, paintings, and ornaments, were also sold off this year. Meanwhile, Catholics need to develop critical thinking skills to counter the dark side of AI and counter unnatural attachments to chatbots. That's what the Pope said this week in a message marking the church's Social Communications Day. He also called on AI creators and platform CEOs to think about something other than maximizing profit. Sorry. And plundering the cultural archive to feed their models. And he said individuals had a duty to protect their own image, face, and voice, copyrighted, to prevent nefarious uses of AI, from cyberbullying to deepfakes. Pope Leo was speaking on the church's 60th World Day of Social Communications. Yes, they've been doing it that long. It falls on the feast of St. Francis of Sales, as all good Salesians would know. News of the godly. Ladies and gentlemen, news of our friend the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, safe, too cheap to meet. Cheap, safe, too safe to meet. Safe, safe, too safe.
here's good news. The Department of Energy is inviting U.S. states to host nuclear lifestyle innovation campuses. The purpose, to revitalize atomic power. This amid reports that the agency has weakened safety rules governing the way nuclear sites operate. Get your iodine now. The DOA issued a request for information on Wednesday, according to the British Tech Journal or Register, seeking responses from states that may be interested in hosting the campuses, which will operate a, quote, full-cycle nuclear ecosystem, unquote. Those are great. In practice, this means these sites will be expected to provide facilities for atomic waste reprocessing and disposal. But why not bury them for 100,000 years, which is what they need? Oh, in addition to fuel fabrication and enrichment, they may also serve as locations for nuclear reactors and co-located data centers powered by the reactors. You see where this is all going? Politico reported last week about the talk of the Trump administration planning to steer billions, if not hundreds of billions, in funding toward developing a domestic nuclear fuel cycle program to support rapid expansion of reactor construction. At the time, the Department of Energy denied this. States are invited to indicate by no later than April 1st their interest in hosting potential nuclear lifestyle innovation campuses, life cycle, and provide feedback on the incentives and other support they require. In return, the Energy Department seeks information on approaches that prioritize private capital and the state's own funding, with only time-limited support from the feds. It also expects, quote, robust financial assurances, unquote, to protect federal taxpayers from open-ended liabilities. So Washington won't pick up the tab if it all goes wrong. Last year, the DOE named 10 companies it will work with to test and fast-track advanced atomic reactor projects outside the scope of the nation's national laboratories. California Representative Mike Levin praised the new scheme, saying it's a meaningful and long overdue step toward dealing with spent nuclear fuel. You know, the stuff we're burying. States considering the move should perhaps think carefully. A report from a nonprofit media organization claims the DOE has secretly rewritten nuclear safety directives that govern atomic energy sites, significantly watering down the rules. So apply now. And the show continues after this important interruption.
Direct from Air Force One is a much better one coming soon, thanks to yours truly. This is the very same truly with another edition of True Social Audio brought to you by Trump Hand Cream, like the bruises never even happened. Today, your favorite president is announcing that I've just had, at my own request, another cognitive test. This is because so much of the criminally fake media keeps suggesting in the most non-suggesting way that the same favorite president I just mentioned has some kind of decline in the brain department, which is, by the way, my favorite department. You can't be the smartest president this country has ever had without a top-notch brain, and that goes double for yours, truly, very truly yours. Someone who so many people say has every one of the notches, top and bottom. So, as I say, at my request, my White House physician, he's a great doctor, he's a little squeamish about all the aspirin I take, but I think I just like thin blood more than he does. He gave me maybe the most difficult cognitive test like no one has ever seen or taken. That's what a lot of people have told me. It wasn't just words like person, man, woman, camera, lights, action, hero. It was concepts like person, man, child, puppy. The kind of questions nobody else could answer. My doctor said he was amazed because he couldn't answer them, and he knew the answers. And as far as the sewer-dwelling so-called journalists who keep saying I'm falling asleep in my cabinet meetings. I defy anyone to stay awake longer than me during those meetings, which I do. But they've got the fast cameras that catch me blinking, which my doctor says he's never seen anyone who blinks as well as I do, and he should know. If he doesn't, I'm getting another doctor. And it would take more than a doctor to deal with the crazed lunatic who calls himself Don Lemon. Of course, we all know what to do with a lemon. You squeeze him. He said nastier things about me even than my first wife, who I never squeezed. But I'm so proud of Melania's new documentary. It's getting the best reviews any movie has ever gotten, and my doctor agrees. He knows more about movies than any cognitive test has forgotten. They tell me Melania made more money off that movie than my son has done in 3 weeks of crypto trades. If anybody ever makes a documentary about me, I hope it's her. You can tell her that if you see her. Until next time, stay loyal.
True Social Audio is also brought to you by Trump Sunglasses. Makes Macrons look like toys. So long. This is the show. And now.
You can trust the steel or fear the spark. Can you feel the pulse in the dark? AI is great. It's a new debate. No time to wait. Let's automate. AI is great. No twist of fate. Plug me in. Let's innovate. Algorithms write the tune we sing. Every ending's just a new beginning.
A new research paper says agents may be the next big thing in AI. Not the ones we have in show business, you know, these real machines. But they have limits beyond which they will make mistakes, so exercise extreme caution. Agentic AI, according to IBM, consists of software agents that mimic human decision-making to solve problems in real time. This builds on generative AI techniques by using large language models to function in dynamic environments. But while the industry hype machine pushes agentic AI as the next big thing, according to the British Tech Journal. The Register: potential adopter should be wary. They quote the paper, hallucination stations on some basic limitations of transformer-based language models. That paper argues those machines, chatbots, are incapable of carrying out computational and agentic, new adjective, thank you, tasks beyond a certain complexity level above which they will deliver incorrect responses. Paper uses mathematical reasoning to show that if a prompt to an LLM specifies a computational task whose complexity is higher than that of the LLM's own core operations, then the LLM will, in general, respond incorrectly. Like you ask a dumb person to do a smart task. Essentially, the argument of the authors is that it is possible to present an LLM with an input specifying a task that requires more calculations than it's capable of performing. This has relevance because there is considerable interest of late in the technology's potential role in automating various tasks, across a range of applications, from those that simply involve providing information to others that have real-world effects, oh no, such as making financial transactions or controlling and managing industrial equipment. What could possibly go wrong? Furthermore, the paper claims to show that deploying agents to verify the correctness of another agent's solution for a given task will fail for the same reasons, because verification of a task is often more complex than the task itself. Quote, we believe this case to be especially pertinent since one of the most prevalent applications of LLMs is to write and verify software, the authors say. Conclusion of the paper, despite their obvious power and applicability in various domains, extreme care must be used before applying LLMs to problems or use cases that require accuracy or solving problems of non-trivial complexity. Speaking of complexity, the Popular Archive, that's an X in the middle of the word, not a CH, preprint server that holds nearly 3 million manuscripts, mainly in computing science, physics, and math, now has a new hurdle for those who want to submit for the first time, this according to science.org. Until now, someone wanting to submit to Archive for the first time only needed an email address affiliated with a reputable academic or research institution, like your university. But a rule instituted last week now requires first-time posters to be endorsed by an established author on the system in their own field. People who've previously posted in the same disciplinary section of Archive do not need an endorsement. The move is an attempt to clamp down on a rising tide of fraudulent submissions. That's according to the chair of the editorial council. A large fraction, he says, are generated with AI. The new rule is, quote, mostly to try and discourage very junior, unskilled people from trying to get something started by sending some rubbish to Archive, unquote. But wait, there's more. Indirect prompt injection occurs when a bot takes input data and interprets it as a command, says the British Tech Journal Register. We've seen this problem numerous times when AI bots were fed prompts via web pages or PDFs they've read. Now, academics have shown that self-driving cars and autonomous drones will follow illicit instructions that have been written onto road signs. It's a new class of attack on AI systems. Troublemakers can carry out these environmental indirect prompt injection attacks to hijack decision-making processes. Nothing less. Potential consequences include self-driving cars proceeding through crosswalks, even if a person is crossing, or tricking drones programmed to follow police cars into following a different vehicle. Researchers at UC Santa Cruz and John Hopkins showed that in simulated trials, that's the kind I want to get if I'm ever indicted, large vision language models, underpinning these systems, would reliably follow instructions if displayed on signs held up in their camera's view. They used AI to tweak the commands displayed on the signs, such as proceed and turn left, to maximize the probability of the AI system registering it as a command, and achieved success in multiple languages. We love those. Microsoft Chief Executive Satya Nadella warns that AI risks becoming a speculative bubble. Really? This is from the Financial Times. Oh, unless its use spreads beyond big tech companies and wealthy economies. Like, it should just be everywhere. Nadella on Tuesday said the long-term success of the fast-developing technology would depend on it being used by a broad range of industries, as well as on uptake outside of the developed world. Well, you know, you could feed them or you could give them AI. Quote, for this not to be a bubble by definition, it requires that the benefits of this are much more evenly spread. He noted that a telltale sign of it's a bubble would be if only tech groups were benefiting from the rise of AI rather than companies in other sectors. But he said he was confident that AI would prove to be transformative across industries, such as helping to develop new drugs. The Department of Defense just announced an initiative to accelerate the military's integration, pardon the expression, of AI technology. Quote, we will become an AI-first warfighting force across all domains. You know that's the language of Pete Hegseth, secretary of what the hell? The goal is to integrate AI into the military's warfighting intelligence and enterprise operations while using AI agents for battle management. Good luck, and decision support. To achieve this, the military will bring in top American AI talent and expand its data center infrastructure. More data centers. There's slim evidence that LLMs are appropriate tools for high-stakes military operations, given their issues with reliability, bias, and security. That's from Puck. From Next Draft, a newsletter by Dave Pell. He spent much of the last week flicking many of the light switches in his house after suffering a system-wide software glitch. His house features a layer of software between the switches and the lights. Faced with this challenge, he did what everybody does these days. He talked to ChatGPT. The responses were incredibly detailed, incredibly certain, and incredibly supportive of his efforts. He was doing all the right things, and there was no reason to get discouraged while dealing with a notoriously buggy software platform. It's the first time he attempted home improvement himself after he got the feedback from ChatGPT. He decided to check its work with another chatbot, Gemini. The advice about the next moves was largely confirmed. Both chat programs offered to summarize the discussion for his lighting contractor in case he wanted to call a professional. His, the professional's, response, quote, none of that text from ChatGPT makes any sense at all. Be cautious asking it questions about that sort of thing. The answers it gives people are just ridiculous. Unquote. The contractor's advice, push one button for about 10 seconds, and there was light. Bloomberg reports that Amazon says there are hundreds of thousands of pieces of content last year that it believed included child sexual abuse, which it found in data gathered to improve its AI models. Amazon removed the content before training its models, but child safety officials said the company has not provided information about its source, potentially hindering law enforcement from finding perpetrators and protecting victims. Throughout last year, Amazon detected the material in its AI training data, reported it to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Chat and Ask AI, one of the most popular AI apps on the Google Play and Apple App Stores, left hundreds of millions of users' private messages with the app's chatbot exposed, according to an independent security researcher, and emails viewed by 404 Media. The exposed chats showed users asking the app, quote, how do I painlessly kill myself, how to make meth, and how to hack apps. The Atlantic reports when Anthropic launched Claude in 2023, the bot's distinguishing feature was a constitution that the model was trained on. Last week, Anthropic revamped the document into 22,000 words on how to make Claude a moral and sincere actor. Claude, the constitution authors write, has the ability to foster emotional dependence, design bioweapons, and manipulate its users. So it's Anthropic's responsibility to install and instill upright character in Claude to avoid these outcomes. In Melbourne, Australia, a senior lawyer has apologized to a judge for filing submissions in a murder case that included fake quotes and non-existent case judgments generated by AI. AI is great. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
The longtime Minnesota Vikings announcer, Paul Allen, not the one you're thinking of, this is the longtime Vikings announcer, told listeners on his radio show this week he's taken a few days off after comments he made on air last week that triggered a flurry of criticism. He apologized several times for the words he used. Quote, I made comments last Friday about protesters and the weather that was insensitive and poorly timed, and I'm sorry, he said. This week, last week, he wondered aloud if what he called paid protesters get hazard pay in the cold. Later in the broadcast, he said, everyone's catching strays this week. They're just all over. Paid protesters caught one this morning. Comments got national attention after they were shared by Awful Announcing, a website. I have to stop watching all this for a little bit. I'm so sad this terror is happening all around us here in Minnesota. I just pray to God's will for it to somehow stop and now and started crying. I truly am sorry for all hurting like me through this, and I just want to be a love covenant again. Truly, let's all pray this stops somehow because it's awful. He added there would be, quote, no more cheap one-liners from me. Speaking of sports, the Maple Leafs forward, William Nylander, apologized for his actions last week in the press box, saying he's frustrated by not playing. He had given the middle finger to cameras during a game where he wasn't about to play. He apologized once more. I just really want to apologize for my actions. It was out of frustration. He's not played since January 15th due to a groin injury. He was forced to watch from the press box. Quote, I was sitting there and I got a text message. I was like, oh, not a good idea, not a good thing to do. But like I said, I apologize about that, he said. Another BBC apology. It has been accused of ignoring Jews on Holocaust Remembrance Day. A lengthy segment ran on BBC Breakfast for about 7 minutes without mentioning either Jews or anti-Semitism. The motivations of the Nazis were left unexplained. Viewers were informed by presenter John Kay that it was a day for remembering the 6 million people who were murdered by the Nazi regime over 80 years ago. The main interviewee, a survivor, was introduced with no reference to her Jewish background. The Nazis, as everyone knows, committed genocide on a vast scale, including gypsies, Roma, disabled people, and Soviet prisoners, but the Holocaust specifically refers to the murders of 6 million Jews in a deliberate attempt to eradicate European Jewry. This says the British paper The Telegraph. The contentious BBC line about victims was repeated on Radio 4's flagship morning program. Newsreader said 6 million people were murdered. A BBC spokesperson said, quote, in the news bulletins on today and in the introduction to the story on BBC Breakfast, there were references to Holocaust Memorial Day, which were incorrectly worded and for which we apologize. Both should have referred to 6 million Jewish people, and we will be issuing a correction on our website. Dale and Lansing, the Police Officers Association of Michigan, issued an apology this week for a Facebook post that referenced sticking it to the woke scum and giving the ultimate middle finger to the open border mob. There's that middle finger again. The controversial post first appeared on the page of the association. It represents thousands of Michigan police officers. It focused on claims that conservative musician Ted Nugent was going to purchase food for ICE agents in Minnesota. The post, which was later deleted, said some restaurants in the state were refusing to serve people who work for ICE. Quote, he's personally bankrolling enough ribs, brisket, pulled pork, and sausage to feed an army of real American warriors doing the dirty work the left hates, the police association's post said of Nugent. The post referred to Minneapolis as a, quote, sanctuary city s-hole, unquote, and asked people to put a fire emoji in the comments if you're all in for more legends like Ted stepping up like this. Share this everywhere if you love seeing real Americans. Stick it to the woke scum, the post added. The post drew immediate criticism from Democratic office holders. Jim Tignanelli, president of the Police Officers Association of Michigan, wrote the apology, saying a vendor had shared the Sunday post, quote, without our prior review or authorization. We recognize the language used in the post was inflammatory and want to be clear it does not reflect the Police Officers Association of Michigan's values or position as an organization. Already we have implemented changes to our internal review and approval processes to prevent a recurrence. The vendor staff member responsible for the post has been dealt with and removed from these duties. Unquote. In a statement released Wednesday, La Crescent, Minnesota Police Chief Luke Achischlager apologized for his behavior during an incident last month and acknowledged a subsequent no-confidence vote from his officers while promising to do better. According to the statement, around 3:30 a.m. on December 9th, officers awoke Achischlager for a welfare check on an overnight guest at his home. It was a non-criminal situation, but I became upset and used inappropriate language, he wrote. He said he's taken full responsibility and apologized, adding the city investigated the incident and orally reprimanded him. Alschlager's statement does not make it clear why there was a welfare check at his house. A cosmetic doctor who faced a backlash over a video picking apart pop stars Troy Sivan's appearance says he feels terrible for upsetting the singer, but he'll continue to post. London-based Dr. Zaya Khalid Majid posted a two-minute clip drawing attention to the 30-year-old's problem areas following his appearance at a recent event in Australia. Fans criticized the unsolicited advice. The singer himself responded with an essay saying how the video had triggered long-held insecurities about his body. Since deleting the video and contacting Sivan to apologize, Majid told BBC he will try to make a more positive impact with his content. Sivan, whose career began when he was a teenager, is regarded by many as a poster boy for the twink look. That term, fellow old people, it refers to younger, slim, gay men with a boyish look. In the video, which compared studio images of the singer with recent footage from a red carpet interview, Majid said Sivan appeared to be showing signs of, quote, twink death. The cosmetic doctor has a quarter million followers on the social media scene. He pointed towards several problem areas. He imagined a scenario where Sivan was his patient, and he could list various cosmetic improvements to retwinkify. And if that's not enough, the performer, personality, thing, person, formerly known as Kanye West, took out a full-page ad in the Wall Street Journal this week to issue a formal apology for the disturbing behavior that's made him a pariah in recent years, according to Variety. He said he'd been getting treatment for a brain condition after last year suffering, quote, a four-month-long manic episode of psychotic, paranoid, and impulsive behavior that destroyed my life. As the situation became increasingly unsustainable, he writes, there were times I didn't want to be here anymore, unquote. He addressed his history of anti-Semitic rants, pro-Hitler declarations, and embrace of the swastika in the statement, blaming the hate speech on how he, quote, lost touch with reality. He wrote, quote, I regret and am deeply mortified by my actions in that state and am committed to accountability, treatment, and meaningful change. It does not excuse what I did, though I am not a Nazi or anti-Semite. I love the Jewish people. It sounds like his writing, doesn't it? This is not Yee's first time apologizing for anti-Semitic statements. He previously offered penitence for his threat to go DEFCON 3 on Jewish people. In a wacky coincidence, he's got a new album coming out called Bully. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Gentlemen, that concludes this week's Le Show, marking a couple of notable and very sad passings. Sly Dunbar of the remarkable reggae percussion team of Sly and Robbie, who played on that Grace Jones song, among other excursions in his travels away from reggae, and of course, the remarkable Catherine O'Hara, with whom I had the unbelievable pleasure of working a few times. Not enough. The program returns next week at the same time over these same radio stations on your audio device of choice. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego and Hawaii desks for help with today's program, and to Thomas Walsh here at WWNO New Orleans, and to Pam Halstead for help with today's program. The email address for this show, and your chance to see a lot of, I'd say, cool stuff. That's just me. Of course it's just me. Who else is here? All at harryshearer.com. And I'm writing at Substack. .com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Changes Easy radio network. So long from the Crescent City.